Hey everybody, this is Marcus.
And this is Nick.
Welcome to the Good E-Reader Radio Show. Welcome to the Good E-Reader Radio Show. This is Marcus.
And this is Nick.
And the date is May the 23rd, 2011. And today on the Good E-Reader Radio Show, we're going to give you more or less a week in review of all the essential stories that transpired over the last week. And we're going to give you some guys some news on things that are going to be happening next week as well. And of course, at the Good E-Reader Radio Show, we cover e-readers, tablet PCs, digital publishing, ebooks, and a whole lot more. And the major stories that we're following for this show is the Barnes & Noble's Nook Colors inability to read more than 1 gig via the SD card. And so this is new technology that they're rolling out. Also, we're going to talk about Barnes & Noble's new publishing platform. This is Pubbit Pro. And although Pubbit is not totally new, it just came out at the tail end of last year, but they did roll out a new program just on Friday, and we'll go into detail on that. Also, we'll get into the big news of the story that we broke last week, and that was how Amazon is going to be going to the EPUB format in terms of publishing companies submitting content exclusively in EPUB, as well as the Kindle's ability to now read EPUB files, and Amazon's gambit to actually sell EPUB books on Amazon.com. So, how are you today, Nick?
I am doing fabulous.
All right. So, we're doing good now, but next week, I don't know if by the end of it, we're going to be doing too well. We are going to Book Expo in New York.
Yes, we are.
And so we're going to be covering all of the conferences over the course of the first few days. We're going to hear Google, Hewlett Packard, We're going to talk to Random House. We're going to talk to Autography, which is the new company that made the Nook Color and the iPad be able to have authors sign your own ebooks, and a whole lot more. So if you are an author, if you're in the publishing industry, or if you just have a lingering interest in the new technologies that are going to be happening in a digital publishing realm over the course of the next year, you won't want to miss that. And Nick, at the end of the week, we're going to be very busy in Taipei.
We are going to Taipei, Taiwan for Computex.
And for those of you who are not familiar, Computex is pretty well the largest computer trade show in all of the lands. It's going to be tablets, it's going to be e-readers, it's going to be 3D TVs, and a whole lot more, and I'm pretty excited about it.
We are going to be there for anywhere between 5 to 6 days. We're going to be there every day on the floor itself at the convention, covering everything and anything to do with tablets and e-readers. So stay tuned for daily updates on that.
And we'll officially be kicking everything off. We're going down there on the 28th, and we're going to be covering the whole conference until about the 5th. So if you are into technology and you are listening to this show, which I think the two roll hand in hand, you won't want to miss next week, because Goody Reader is going to the next level here, representing worldwide. So we're really happy about this. And let's start with e-reader news. And we just got our hands on a new e-reader.
Pocketbook 360. This is one of the latest from Pocketbook. Pocketbook has made different sized e-ink tablets, e-readers, as well as a Android tablet. So they're fairly diverse in what they release.
Yeah, they've been around for a number of years, and this is their latest e-reader, the Pocketbook 360 Plus. And we reviewed this. We're not going to rehash exactly spec for spec, but suffice to say, it's 5 inches, it's a Visplex e-ink display, so a lot of people were saying that it's Pearl, which it isn't, it's Visplex, and the resolution isn't too bad, it's 800 by 600, it has a 533 megahertz processor, storage is respectable, you get about 2 gigs of memory, but we noticed that Pocketbook includes a lot of free ebooks. There's roughly over 1,000 ebooks that comes loaded on your device, and that itself takes up about 1 gig. So you'll probably want to clean up some of the open source books that come with your device. Things I liked about it is that, pictures looked good. It was kind of simplistic in a design. It, you know, had 3 buttons. You know, they worked, although they don't have any type of, you know, images, or there's no indication on what the buttons actually do. So you kind of have to do a lot of trial and error. I like the cover that came with it. It makes it easily transportable without having to damage the screen. But I don't know if I'm too much of a fan on this one. What do you think?
Speaking of that cover, it was a very weird cover, and now, if you haven't seen it yet, it's not really a case, so don't get excited. It's just this very difficult-to-take-off plastic piece that's over the screen. But in terms of what I think about it, you know, I agree with what you said. It's got nice pictures, got nice contrast, a fair number of levels of grayscale. Now, the buttons, I agree with you on that as well. They have no indication of what they do or what they are. And and the device itself does rotate automatically 360, so it does different orientations. And now, those buttons don't do the same thing every time. Depending on which way you rotate them, they will do different things. And not having any indication of what they are to begin with, you get lost. So that was a problem I had. But other than that, the text is formatted properly. It has wireless internet access, although it doesn't support special characters at certain times, and it's quite difficult to set up in a way. And
yeah, speaking of such, I think we had a hell of a time trying to get the Wi-Fi working on this. You had a protected network, and it pretty well didn't read underscores, hyphens, anything. It was we couldn't even get it running. And then when I tried it on my Wi-Fi network, it also didn't well, and my Wi-Fi password is just all numbers, and so the only way that I was able to get the 360 Plus working was to open up my Wi-Fi network, so instead of being like a closed network with a password, I had to just open it up and let anyone and their mother ride my internet connection, and so that was really the only way, so maybe they'll address that in a firmware update. And,
hope so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things it had going for it is that the firmware updates look like they were pushed. So when you established a Wi-Fi connection and you loaded up the web browser, you did see a quick menu that popped up saying that it was checking the server for new content. So that led me to believe that it was talking to a Pocketbook server. So hopefully, unlike their other e-readers where you had to actually load the updates on the SD card or micro SD card and load it off that way, hopefully with this it actually pushes it. It would make it a little bit more relevant. But yeah, I'm not too much of a fan of this device. I mean, it's simplistic in its design. The essence of reading books on it was okay. It certainly wasn't the best, but it did provide high contrast, like you mentioned, and that's pretty well where it sort of ended. Pictures and books and page turn speeds were okay. The dictionary, nothing to write home about. The notes, pretty abysmal. Most of the applications and games sucked. It would have been good if Doom was ported on this, because a few months ago, the Pocketbook 360 did make an appearance online, and the boys at Pocketbook had released a demo where they were actually playing Doom on it, and it was kind of, I don't know, I didn't really like the fact that they didn't port it with it, or at least have instructions anywhere for people to be able to do it. But that aside, the web browsing experience was horrible. Nothing was really formatted properly. It, you know, obviously it's an e-reader, but if you ever looked at web browsing on a Kindle or a Nook, it's pretty solid. On this one, when you type on the keyboard, it always defaults to the middle, so it doesn't leave off where you left off. If I press an A and I press Enter, it goes back to the G position, so it make typing pretty well an 8-letter web address. It took about 2 minutes. And
yeah, honestly, I totally agree. I mean, the web browsing experience on this was just, it's just not up to par with the things that are out these days. If you look on a Kindle and a Nook, although it is e-ink, it's almost seamless from an actual LCD screen on your internet, on your actual PC or laptop. You can't really tell the difference other than it being in grayscale. And the device itself, how I would sum it up is that it doesn't have any draw. You don't get drawn to it anyway. You just see this square, tiny screen with a bunch of buttons that you don't even know what they do, or if they were buttons at all at first glance. And there's just nothing really drawing you into buying it, and especially after seeing so many reviews of people going a little bit deeper into what it does, this just it kind of turns you off even more.
For sure. I don't know if I could recommend getting this device. I mean, it is certainly better than, say, the Ektako JetBook Mini, which is probably the closest comparison in terms of how big it is, the design, the functionality. So it's better than that, but considering it costs $149, you can buy a Nook for that, you can buy a Kindle for that, and have access to a lot more content and just a better sort of e-reader experience. So I would recommend you miss this one. What do you think?
Definitely, honestly, if you're going to spend that much, pennies more, you get something exactly the same price for way more bang for your buck. The Nook Wi-Fi alone has a far bigger screen and a color touchscreen on the bottom, so I wouldn't know where to go with this device. It's honestly more frustrating than useful.
Yeah, in 2011, it's not very relevant. If it came out maybe 2 years ago, I would say that this would probably be good considering what was around at that time. But in 2011, a lot of things are 3G. You know, there's just the much more refined and elevated technology, and this doesn't really feel like a polished device. So we both recommend to miss this device. And in other e-reader news, there's a new Pen Digital Android e-reader that's coming out soon. It's actually called the Pen Digital Planet, and it's currently at the FCC, which is pretty well the last stop to get certification to be sold in the US and in North America. just to give you guys a little bit of info, it's 7 inches, so it's like the original Pan Digital novels that came out. It's 600 by 800 pixels. It is running a little bit better version of Android than their previous models. It is being billed, obviously, as an e-reader and not a tablet. You'll be able to buy ebooks from other stores and load them on the device via Adobe Digital Editions. And it'll actually come with a SlideMe app market. So it's a private app market. It'll give you a chance to be able to, you know, download apps like Facebook and Twitter and things like that. I'm not too high on Pan Digital. We, you know, we reviewed like the first e-readers that they released, and there was recalls originally, and they had to recall the device twice, and then they released sort of a new hardware version of it, and it was okay. But I think, you know, when you're a new company and you release a product, and everyone who bought it is all up in arms about it crashing, about the screen dying, about volume not working, and the company does a recall on their first product, it really doesn't bode too well, and it's really hard to sort of recover from that. Although Pan Digital in the marketplace does really well. I know in Canada it enjoys a lot of visibility compared to a lot of other tablets. You know, you can go to Future Shop, you can go to, you know, Circuit City or Radio Shack, and they sell these there, whereas maybe they don't really sell a lot of other e-readers. So it definitely enjoys visibility, but I'm not totally sold on the Pan Digital brand just because of, you know, of first impressions are everything, and they totally blew their first impression. Although we did play around with the latest one that they had, that was the Pan Digital Novel 9-inch not too long ago.
I mean, at the same time, I couldn't say too many good things about that device just on my end here, because, I mean, although it's a very price-friendly device, but for me, it's just a little too slow and laggy for what it's dishing out, it being an Android tablet and all that. I'm not feeling it too well with the lagginess of it and the slow response when you go to click on something. If it's an application that requires a little bit more power to start up and get up and running, it just takes far too long, and closing down the apps are just, it's a little frustrating for me at least. I don't know if you feel the same way there, but that's what I found.
Yeah, I mean, almost all of them are more or less the same device. They're just maybe in a different package. You know, there was a 7-inch and 9-inch. They're virtually the same unit, just minus the one's a little bit bigger than the other. But, you know, in terms of the applications they ship with, in terms of just their content system as a whole, you know, the only way to buy ebooks is through Barnes & Noble. You don't have access to the official Android market. And what really kind of I don't like about the Pan Digital brand is all their e-readers or tablets are all resistive screens. And
I highly agree. I agree with you. I am not a fan of resistive screens at all. Anytime you get a resistive screen on a big tablet screen like that, like I can live with maybe a cell phone or a Nintendo DS or a touchscreen gaming system. When you get a big screen, like a 9-inch or 7-inch, and you're putting a gigantic resistive film over that LCD screen, you're really taking away all of the quality that you see in videos and books and games and everything else, because that screen is covered by this resistive film that is completely washing out the image, and light just diffuses on it and gets all blurry. I'm really not a fan of resistive touch at all.
Yeah, me neither. Not only is it harder to interact with it, but everything just looks washed out. I mean, for me, it looks low rent. You know what I mean?
It really brings down the quality and the feel of the device when you see there's a film on top that bends as you touch it. It's just not a pleasant thing.
Yeah, and I mean, for all of you that don't really know the difference, capacitive touchscreens are so much better than resistive. So if you're looking to buy like an e-reader or a tablet, most of the times it's tablets being billed as e-readers. Try to get a device that has a capacitive touchscreen. Everything is a little bit more crisper, a little bit more vibrant. Not only do e-books look better, but if you get e-books that have audio or video content embedded in them, it looks a lot better on a capacitive screen than a resistive screen. The main difference is, you know, Penn Digital, it's sort of, they've only been around for a few years. They probably don't have a whole lot of money, so they could really only maybe afford to use the weakest screen technology, you know, to hustle their products. In closing, the advantage that this new model, the Penn Digital Planet, has over all of the others is that it actually has two cameras. So it has a front-facing 0.3 megapixel front-facing webcam, and that's to video chat, and it has a back-facing or rear-facing 1.3 megapixel webcam. It's going to be around $200, and you can expect to see it on the market around July of this year.
So another e-reader news, good news about Kobo, at least for them living in the U.S. So Kobo, being a Canadian company, reduces its price of the Kobo wireless e-reader to $99 in the States. We all know the Kobo as one of the cheapest good e-readers out there, especially the Kobo wireless. So having it at $100 is actually a big plus, seeing that the original Kobo without Wi-Fi used to be $100 a while back. And this can be picked up in the USA at Best Buy, Walmart locations and such. Now, it's kind of weird how Kobo, being a Canadian company, we're still paying $129 for the wireless device, but the exchange rate doesn't really amount to the difference in prices between the two countries. What do you think there?
I mean, it seems to me that with Kobo, I mean, their company and sort of their business model, I really like their apps that they make for Android and iOS, and you know, their exclusive apps for the Playbook and things like that. They do a really good job. In Canada, it always seems with tablets or technology in general, we're always paying a little bit more.
It's weird because even with the fluctuating exchange rate, it doesn't amount to any more than a couple dollars, never mind like the difference between 30 between a device that's the exact same device. I mean, it's not like they're making a new model for each country. This is the same general device, same shell, same internal, so it's just kind of strange.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, if it costs $99 in the States and anywhere between $129 and $139 in Canada, I mean, that's an extra like $40. And
it is.
I mean, some people may be able to just say, okay, you know, whatever, I'll just take it. But in the other way, I think it's just because there's just less competition in Canada. If you look at, say, Best Buy in the States, you know, sure, they sell the Kobo, but they also sell the Barnes & Noble Nook. They sell the Kindle. They sell the Penn Digital. You know, they sell a ton of different sort of e-readers that are all competing with each other. So in order to, you know, stand out in the States, you know, the dollar is king, right? And you know, a lot of people will just buy the cheapest thing available, whereas in Canada, you know, you can't walk into a store and have any type of selection. You know, maybe Sony's, maybe Allure Tech, maybe Penn Digital and Kobo, and that's pretty well it. And you know, maybe for tablets, the iPad and Playbook, and that's really all Canada gets, you know, for both tablets and e-readers.
Locally, yeah, you can't buy Kindles or Nooks anywhere in the entire country. You cannot pick them up locally at any store. No one will really have them. Any major supermarkets won't have any of those devices. Like Marcus says, yeah, you may be able to find a Sony if they ever export any more units. As you know, there's a fairly huge shortage right now, worldwide kind of thing. And yeah, the Penn Digital, sure, you can pick one up at Costco, and maybe a BlackBerry Playbook from a cell phone provider, but none of these devices, yeah, you can really get in store. So I see where you're getting at.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of one of the things that sucks, but being in Vancouver, at least there is a local company that actually does sell e-readers locally. They're just not a big company like Future Shop or Circuit City, and that's Shop e-readers, and they actually do stuff locally here, but they also ship Kindles and Nooks and harder-to-find stuff all over Canada.
Exactly. Shopee Readers is probably the only place in the whole country that will allow Nooks to be shipped. They'd have the whole Barnes and Noble line. They have tablets, e-readers, accessories, pretty much everything. And yeah, if you want, they're creating a Canadian market of their own kind of thing. So if you are really, in need and you don't want to go through imports and duties and all the border fees and international shipping and waiting, weeks upon weeks of stuff to arrive by boat, yeah, ShopeeReaders.com is definitely one of the Canadian powers right there.
Yeah, I mean, I buy a fair amount, and they do actually help sponsor our blog and website. But aside from that, I mean, you can't get a Barnes and Noble anything outside of the States. Just
No.
Barnes and Noble will not ship it to you. And, really the only other way to get it is on eBay. But you never know sort of who you're dealing with on eBay, if it's really used where they're saying it's new, or, people with, one or two feedbacks. So you really don't, you can't vouch for their history, where if you deal with an internet company that has been around for a few years, it's easier to do business with them and pay via credit card or PayPal, to an established company, rather than just dealing with just some guy on Craigslist or just some guy on, eBay or something like that. So, apparently, Nick, that there is a new e-ink technology that was just unveiled.
There is a joint venture between e-ink and Epson, and we're saying e-ink as the company, not the technology. There is a difference. E-ink is the technology of the screens that they use in Kindles and Barnes and Noble Nooks and Sonys, where you see kind of a simulated paper image, but e-ink itself is a company as well. So yeah, they're teaming up to make a whole bunch of new screens, and it's looking amazing so far, with resolutions skyrocketing at 2400 by 1650. Now that is huge resolution for grayscale images. That's gonna look mighty smoothed out, and this is on a 9.7-inch screen. So paired with Epson's high-speed display controllers, honestly, like, these images are going to refresh really quickly, they're going to appear really quickly. You're not going to see any of that staining on your screen when you've had a picture there too long on your on your Kindle or something like that. I'm looking forward to it, definitely, with two big companies as well. They're well known.
Yeah, I mean, that's next level stuff right there. So hopefully that it just doesn't become dead technology. Often with a lot of these collaborations, like the new Miracell screen technology, or Liquid Vista, a lot of times all this great technology is made and it looks awesome. Just no company has ever really buy into it, so it just becomes like, just our research and development program where it never really takes off. But this looks really good, and it is made by two big companies working together. Now,
Definitely. That's another thing. Like, I really hope people don't disregard e-ink as a technology so quickly, because they think, oh, you can't watch videos and images, don't show up as quickly. But it's really, that's not what it's about. It is about the reading experience, because I don't know if many of you know this, but when you look at an LCD screen, it is refreshing. You just don't notice it because it's flickering so quickly. So in a way, it does agitate your eyes because the screen is flickering regardless of you being able to see it or not. Whereas an e-ink screen, once the image has produced itself on your screen, it is there to stay until it changes. So it is simulating an actual book or magazine or PDF. So I really hope that they do continue expanding on e-ink, because I think it's a great technology, regardless of who says, oh, you can't play games on it. Well, that's not what it's about, and I think it's amazing technology.
I agree. And, so many people are quick to write off e-readers, especially kind of like the new school kids that are out there that, they have PSPs, they have, all of the latest gadgets and cell phones just in the last few years. You can play full HD video on them now. And so people will look at e-ink and it'll be just a grayscale picture, and they'll be like, oh, that looks so like 1980s, or so 1990s. But most of the tech is all super new. it's
Exactly.
it's just you know it's not a multi You don't buy an e-reader for a multimedia device. You buy an iPad, or you buy a Motorola Zoom for that. you know, you buy an e-reader to read books.
Exactly. That's the biggest issue, is that it's people's understanding of what they're looking at. They're not looking at a calculator screen. That's not what it is. It is a very, very high-tech piece of technology that is e-ink. So, yeah, I would say it's mostly people's understanding that they don't know what it is.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you could pretty well walk into every major store now and see an example of e-ink screens. And a lot of people try to fool you into buying really cheap quality tablets saying they're e-readers. They're not. An e-reader is a device that has e-ink. And anything else is considered a tablet. And that's kind of what really pisses me off about, you know, companies like Pan Digital and a lot of, you look at, say,
Velocity Micro Cruise.
Yeah, it's, you know, they're calling it the Cruise Reader, but it's a freaking cheap ass tablet, and you know it pisses me off, and it's because they're taking advantage over people that don't know any better, because e-readers now are a lot more popular than they were, say, 2 years ago, when just there was so few companies that actually sold them. And I mean, the sales speak for themselves. I mean, Amazon now sells ebooks on a 3-to-1 ratio versus real books. They're making billions of dollars, you know, off of just hustling their Kindles and their ebooks. And there's a lot of money to be made, and more people are buying them. But at the same time, you know, more people are saying, hey, you know, a color e-reader, neat. And it's not really an e-reader at all. It's pretty well like a tablet. But if you haven't seen one before, check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/user/goodereader. We have over 200 review videos on e-readers, almost every single one that's ever been made in the last few years. So if you do want to see for yourself what the difference is between tablet devices, e-readers, resistive screen technology, and capacitive screen technology, don't take our words for it, because we can rant and rave about this all day, but nothing screams more than pictures and video, and at Good E-Reader we have that in abundance. Now, over the last week, Barnes & Noble has been a busy little beaver in terms of newsworthy news. Well, let's just put it that way. There is a new Barnes & Noble Nook e-reader coming out, or, you know, it's not maybe coming out, but it's due to be announced on May the 24th. And Barnes & Noble did trademark the name Nook 2. There really isn't a whole lot known about it, but, you know, basically, you know, tomorrow, all the news will come out, and we'll be able to give you the scoops on this. So we could speculate, but we choose not to. I kind of just want to talk about facts and not fiction. So stay tuned to the Good E-Reader blog on Tuesday, and that will be May the 24th. So stay tuned for that to find out all the details on the Nook 2. In other Barnes & Noble news, there is a new version of the Nook Color coming out that will actually prevent you from loading in your own ebooks, your own video, and your own content. Now, you're going to say, Marcus, that sounds like crazy. How can they do this? Well, they really limit you to the usage of the Nook's 5 gig internal memory. So they only allow you 1 gig that you can like load in your own content, and by that I mean your own videos, pictures, ebooks, and so on. And that includes actually other apps purchased from the Nook store. Now, Barnes & Noble Nook Color has been around since, you know, just late last year. It is a tablet, but it's probably the best tablet ever made to be a dedicated e-reader. So it almost sort of bridges that gap between e-reader and tablet, and they do it way better than any other company that I've ever seen. So there is a new batch of Nook Colors. So your existing Nook Color, if you have one now, will be totally safe. If you're going to buy a Nook Color from your local Barnes & Noble, you want to pay attention to the blue dot on the package. It'll actually also have a silver lining on the package too. So those are two things to look forward to. Silver Lining, and a Blue Dot. If you notice either of those on a Nook color that you might be buying in the next little while, try to see if they have any other versions, because you don't really want a provider to lock you into, you know, loading in your own content. You know, you buy it, you do what you want with it. Having a company basically tell you that you can only do certain things with it, I don't know if I could fully get behind that.
You know what, man? I can't even tell you how much I disagree with this in every possible way. You can't release a product and tell people what to... No, you know what? Control what people do with it in terms of the storage. I mean, there's... I don't even know where to start with this, because if a company is confident in their product would sell, you don't have to say, oh, we don't want people loading in all this other mumbo-jumbo into their devices. You know, we want to control it. We want to make sure that they can only use 1 gig and they have to take advantage of the internal storage. I don't see a point to that, because that, you know, they should let people put on the device whatever they wish, because this is a reason that I'm not too keen about Apple products in the way that you have to use iTunes, and if you register your device on someone else's computer, your entire iTunes library gets deleted and you have to start over, kind of thing. So, no, I'm going to say I'm in complete disagreement with this new batch that's coming out. You shouldn't do that with devices like this. I mean, it's just not kosher.
Yeah, I mean, the story probably didn't get the attention that it deserved. A lot of people just left it at what we told you, or maybe they were a little bit more ambiguous where they didn't really say too much. But yeah, I mean, it's just another example of a company just trying to control their own product for the end user. So you spend $250 on this device, and you're having the company tell you what you can do and how much data of your own that you can put on it. So it ships with 5 gigs, but it will only allow you 1 gig to put what you want on it. The rest of it, you have to buy content through Barnes & Noble. And they're doing this to, like, have more people do business with them rather than download an Amazon app and buy off of Amazon on your Nook color. So
in a way, what it's doing, it's... In a way, looking at these reports and blog posts like on Goody Reader and such, like it diverts me from buying this now, at least a new batch, one from the new batch, because I don't want to be told that I only get 1,000 megabytes to play around with my own stuff, because that's just not enough for me. It's going to make me, and I'm going to say confidently, a bunch of other people like me go somewhere else and get something else instead of this device, you know, because you're pushing some people away. They got to, in general, yeah, let's get some more business, let's let people download more things from Barnes & Noble, but you are pushing a fair amount of people away from your device.
Totally. In other Barnes & Noble news, they have released Pubit Pro, and this was a quiet little release. They didn't really do any press releases. They didn't really do any hubbubaloo about, you know, about what this program is all about. You know, normally when companies unveil new products or services, there's press releases everywhere. It's pretty easy to find out more details about it. But Barnes & Noble didn't really do much. So we got the exclusive scoop on Pubit Pro and everything that has to do with that. Originally, they trademarked the phrase Pubit Pro about a month ago. And since then, there's been many baseless rumors, a lot of speculation on what it's about. A lot of people thought that it was going to be a new premium program for their existing Pubit program. And if you have no idea what Pubit is, it's basically a program launched last year that allows authors to submit their own ebooks to the Barnes & Noble online bookstore. And these books will be listed side by side with the best-selling authors like the James Patterson, the Charlene Harris, Stieg Larssons, and so on. So it's basically a self-publishing platform. So if you're an author and you have written a book in text, RTF, or EPUB formats, you can simply submit it to Pubit for free. There's no really hidden terms or anything like that. You can select a price between 99 cents all the way up to $199, and you get about 40 to 65% of the residuals of anybody that buys your book. Pubit Pro is basically a line of videos and a program that they rushed out to help advise independent authors on the perils of self-publishing. And it, ironically enough, we actually launched at the beginning of last month an indie author initiative program that pretty well did the exact same thing. We've interviewed a ton of authors, and we have, you know, interviewed first-time authors. We've interviewed authors that have published between 12 to 30 books. We've interviewed publishing companies all across the spectrum. We've interviewed Smashwords. We've interviewed BookBaby. We've interviewed even European companies and a whole lot more. And when we go to the Book Expo next week, we'll be talking to the biggest publishing houses. And it was probably the same reason where we get people to talk to the audience directly. When, a lot of times when you interview companies themselves about their product, you kind of get the company line, you know, where they have, they can only say so much. They can only say what was approved in the PR department. They can't really just tell you, like, tell you how it just is. Whereas Puppet Pro is primarily on Facebook right now, and it's a series of videos that they've done, about 6 or 7 videos right now, and they had the authors talking to you directly, very candidly, in about a 5-minute video. They have videos by H.P. Mallory, which are pretty well the face, which is the Puppet poster child. She's sold the most books. She was there for the Barnes & Noble event in California a few months ago, where they kind of experimented with Barnes & Noble taking advantage of the retail chain and actually showing off their self-publishing platforms in the stores. And that's something that Amazon, who has the most successful author self-publishing program, they don't have a retail chain to actually tap into. So this was savvy marketing by Barnes & Noble to actually put its successful independent authors in a store. You know, you had 30 or 40 people there. You have them just answering their questions, like, do you have any tips on how to market yourself online? Or how do you get around writer's block and questions like that. So that's what Puppet Pro seeks to address, is to, you know, tell you how to get the creative juices flowing, how to do cover art. If you're not a good artist, where do you go to hire people who do cover art, how to brand yourself, how to create a web page, and so on. So it's a cool little program on the pretty well the front page of our blog. We have a big article about it. So if you want to learn more about Puppet or Puppet Pro, check that out. And there is some other Barnes & Noble news. I know we've been talking about it a lot, but it's been a very newsworthy week for them so far. It looks like they've had a huge offer to actually sell the Barnes & Noble retail chain, the brand, the e-readers, the e-books, and everything to cable TV pioneer John Malone. And he's pretty well been known. He's 70 years old, and he is really well known as a shrewd, tax-efficient investments, and owns stakes in a wide range of media and internet assets, like the Shopping Channel, QVC, DirecTV. He runs Stars. He does a lot. You know, he owns pretty well. He's an entertainment mogul, and during his run as an operator in its cable TV business, he was dubbed by Vice President Al Gore as the Darth Vader of publishing and business. And so I thought that that was awesome. But so he's pretty well offered $17 per share, or $1.02 billion to just straight up buy the company. And it's a very small offer, although it's more than the Barnes & Noble stock right now, but a lot of people are saying that the offer is pretty well inadequate, that he's pretty well looking to just, you know, take advantage of the market climate, that, you know, Borders has collapsed, and they were one of the largest bookstore chains in the U.S., and they were, you know, they had presence in Australia and New Zealand as, you know, the Red Group and White Cools in New Zealand, and so, you know, it's a good time for companies or individuals, you know, representing big conglomerates to, you know, just buy it. Now, A little known fact is that Barnes & Noble has about 400 leases on different bookstores that they operate in the States, and they expire around April 30th of 2015, with over half of their stores in 2012 and 2013. So, you know, with that many stores coming up for renewal, as in terms of you have to sign like another 5-year or 10-year lease, it's these offers of $1 billion are quite intriguing. Although Barnes & Noble is probably disappointed with the figure, but they've really made no official comments on what they think of it. But a serious operator that has a lot of money, and you know, he owns DirecTV, he owns Stars, he's not a small fish. You know, this guy knows what he's doing. So,
and he's showing interest in Barnes & Noble, so you know.
Yeah, and I mean, I would, you know, if I had the option to buy the Barnes & Noble brand or the Borders brand, I would definitely go after the Barnes & Noble brand.
Yeah, Darth Vader made a really good choice there.
Yeah, totally. Now,
all right, for Barnes & Noble, Nook Color, I know we've been talking about Barnes & Noble a lot, but they are really showing up with the news there. So their app store, which actually has only been about a week since the launch of their Barnes & Noble app store, for the Nook Color at least, has reached 1 million downloads for just applications in general, and you can get quite a few things there. You can get, you know, notes, calendars, of course, Angry Bird, Dr. Seuss apps, you know, bowling apps, flight apps. Just, it's looking okay. Now, don't think it's the Android marketplace, because that's what it's not. It is a Barnes & Noble kind of their own brand of it, in a way. Like, you do get some of the things that you would see on a typical Android device, but it is indeed not the Android marketplace. But they are 1 million downloads in a week. That's pretty good, definitely.
It shows you how many people actually have this device.
And exactly.
I would say the Nook Color was probably the most successful device that they put out to date, and they only really started putting out e-readers last year. I think it was April or May, really, did they put out their first model. And or when did they do the Nooks last year, 2010 or 2009?
I believe they were late 09. They were doing Nook Wi-Fi 3G, the e-ink screens at least.
Yeah, I think that sounds right. You know, with so many e-readers coming out, sometimes they just get lost in a shuffle. But suffice to say, I mean, the Nook Color was only really around the last few quarters of last year, and they've sold tremendously well. The big thing that people wanted was, because it's sort of in essence, an Android tablet, like we said before, that is probably the best e-reader Android tablet. And due to popular demand, they did open up an app store. And it's just like allows you to be able to download Barnes & Noble approved apps. So again, it's not the Android market where there's tons and tons and tons of stuff there. It's pretty well just select things are available, but there's a bunch of games, you know, Facebook and Twitter and productivity apps and things like that. And it came in the most recent firmware update. And what also came in the update was Flash. So you can experience the entire internet in Adobe Flash as it was meant to be browsed. So that was pretty cool.
Definitely.
Now, there was some actual, in the last bit of Barnes & Noble news, there was something about magazines and newspapers?
Exactly. Lots of Barnes & Noble and Nook news today. Definitely. The Nook for Android gives you magazines and newspaper access. So you can actually download and purchase up to, I think they're saying, 140 different magazines and newspapers and such. These range from ESPN, Food and Wine, Men's Health, Rolling Stone, Newsweek, Popular Science, PC Magazines, Oprah Magazine, and so forth. So, yeah, Barnes & Noble application is free and does come installed on many of the tablets, Android tablets, such as the Pen Digital Novel, for example. So now that you can actually download magazines and newspapers, I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, when one of the big selling points of the Nook Color when it did come out was that you did have access to magazines and newspapers, but you could only get them if you had a Nook Color. So
exactly, that used to be the only way. So.
Yeah, so it's kind of cool to see that they've matured enough in terms of how many magazines and newspapers are available now that they can sort of just update all of their apps and allow people who have Android phones, Android tablets, to be able to actually use a free app and actually use that app to purchase content. So a smart move, definitely a smart move, because
that's honestly the way to do it. Honestly, like, don't just keep it bogged down to one of your devices, really branch it out to your brand.
Yeah. Now that we've gotten e-reader and e-reader app news out of the way, let's take a look at some of the stories that happened over the last week in the realm of tablet computers. There really hasn't been a lot of stories, but there are a few kind of cool ones that I think that you guys would really find interesting.
One that I wanted to share with you guys comes from our friends in Japan at Fujitsu. Now, they're fairly new to tablets and had released a tablet PC that is really aimed at pretty much businessmen. It was a 10.1-inch Lifebook with Windows 7 on it. Now, that was a little expensive, running about $1,700. So what they are actually, what they have already decided to do is release something a little more consumer accessible in the third quarter of 2011 for about $350 to $600. Now, not a lot more details are available right now, but coming from a company like Fujitsu, I mean, they right now, I actually like Fujitsu quite a bit. I do have a waterproof Japanese phone from them that I use, and if you've ever gone to a supermarket that has self-checkout, most of those machines are actually Fujitsu that do that. So a company with really good technology here. I'm not really worried about them dropping the price for consumers, because it's still going to be really up there with the latest and greatest, I would assume.
Yeah, I mean, Android Honeycomb 3.1 tablet, it seems to be that's the next gen stuff right there. So let's hope that they get it out, you know, before the holiday season of this year, if they are going to do it. There is a new tablet called the Kino tablet, and it's designed for kids. So it's one of the few devices that are made for kids. It's an Android tablet. It's 800 megahertz dual core processor, 7-inch 800 by 480 pixel display. You have about 2 gigs of internal storage, Android 2.1 for the operating system. And it's designed for kids, so you have math apps, you have games, you have e-reader apps, it does Wi-Fi. We have a cool little video of it on our site if you want to check it out. It's probably on about the third page of our blog by now.
Now moving on to a little bit of what I would call unfortunate news, the BlackBerry Playbook has, it's come to the attention of Research in Motion that 935 BlackBerry Playbooks have been delivered to Staples and have been defective. So they are faulty devices. They are undergoing a recall for those devices. So you have to check your serial number and, you know, make sure you're staying on top of that, because 935 of them, I mean, that's quite a bit. And this does apply to all Staples stores. We have an image from a Staples order that was relating to the faulty BlackBerry Playbooks, and it says that the participating stores are all stores under the Staples chain. So you really got to stay on top of that, because I mean, 935 of them, you're bound to have something there. I mean, you don't see that very often, honestly. Like, I know that if one thing goes wrong in a factory of an assembly line, anything behind it kind of follows the same stamping process, if you may. Like, it's, I mean, they're mass produced, obviously. There's not, they doesn't have one guy making each individual one. So, yeah, I can understand that in a factory things can happen, but 935 of them being delivered defective, that's a little much, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, totally. And speaking of mishaps at factories, did you hear about the Foxconn plant in China? Now, this is the same one that there was a rash of suicides in the news earlier on in the year and last year, and it's the same plant that the Apple iPad and iPad 2s are made at. They suffered a big explosion that apparently killed around 6 or 7 people and injured hundreds. So there's really no news on what caused the explosion. It's pretty well, those big factories in China are almost like arcologies where they live in barracks, everything's fenced off, media is like seldom to ever let in, and if they are let in, they have handlers for you, so you can go certain places, you can talk to certain people, but you're not allowed to just like walk around and talk with whoever you want. So they're pretty secretive on what happened, but it was on Chinese national news that it was the Foxconn plant where Apple iPad 2s were manufactured, so there was a big explosion there, and it happened just towards the tail end of last week, so no word yet on how that will affect iPad 2 productions, so we'll have to just kind of wait and see. Now, here's the big story that a lot of people have been waiting for, and this is pretty well a very popular story on our blog that's been retweeted and shared on Facebook thousands of times. Every single major e-reader forum picked up on our story and debated it endlessly. Let's just set the stage. At Good E-Reader, we just don't parrot the news. You know, we make the news. We don't review units that we don't have in our own hands, and that comes with e-readers and tablets. A lot of people will just read various reviews on the internet and then write their own review. I mean, there's so many blogs and news sources and even newspapers that do that. They'll have a guy in a tech review column write a review on an iPad, but he's never actually had one. He just sort of parrots what other people are saying. So at Good E-Reader, we interview a lot of companies, and we talk to a lot of e-reader, tablet companies, publishing companies, and independent authors, and all across the spectrum. We're in regular contact with everybody. And the consensus was for four different publishing companies that we spoke to. Some are minor, some are actually very big, and they all told us that one thing, that Amazon was planning something big, and they have been told by Amazon that they will be implementing EPUB books in the Amazon ebook store. And they also told the publishers that in the future, instead of making books customized to be in the Mobi format, which was Amazon's proprietary format, if you buy a book off of Amazon, you could really only read it on a Kindle e-reader, or if you have a Kindle app, say for Kindle for PC, Kindle for Android, Kindle for BlackBerry, but you can't actually put a Kindle book on another e-reader because its format is incompatible. Now, a lot of things have changed in the e-reader world since Amazon first came onto the scene. First, e-books really took off in the last few years. It's retailed to be at like the $15 billion by like 2015. Everybody's jumping into the ebook revolution. And what Amazon is faced with is an obsolete ebook format that's only compatible with its own e-readers, where the company themselves, they want to be able to be a platform that no matter what e-reader or tablet that you have, you can buy Amazon books and read them on the device and transfer them to other devices. Now, what publishing companies have told us was there was a lot of agreements that have not been officially signed yet. We were told by one of our readers that Smashwords and Amazon had been delaying a large distribution agreement because in the vaguest of terms, Smashwords said that there was something big and new happening at Amazon. So they said that on the record. Now, Smashwords, of course, was not one of the four companies that we've talked to. But, you know, when one company tells you one thing, you can kind of just, you know, maybe they don't know what they're talking about, or maybe they're just spreading rumors. But when three or four different companies all tell you the same thing, there's something really going to that. So what we do know, and this is sort of, this is what we know is to be truth, that Amazon is planning some big news in the near future, and it has to do with the EPUB format and the Kindle's ability to read that format. So if you have a Kindle e-reader right now, you cannot read an EPUB book on your e-reader, but that's all going to change very soon, as well as Amazon's going to get into the business with selling EPUB books directly. Now, what we don't know is what's going to happen to the Amazon format as it stands, PRC, Mobi, AZW, whatever you want to call Amazon's format. No one really knows what's going to happen to it, as well as nobody knows is if the Kindle One or the Kindle second generation, if the firmware updates will be compatible with those e-readers to be able to read the new formats. So there's kind of like a lot of unknown factors. We don't really want to speculate on any of that. We just want to tell you what we know. I think that Amazon embracing EPUB technology would be the right thing to do. There's a lot of EPUB similarities embedded into the data structure of Amazon's own proprietary format. So it's not like Amazon just developed this format of nowhere, but they actually took the basis of EPUB, integrated that into their own ebook format. So I think Amazon, it would make sense that they would move in this direction in order to sell more books, to be available on more devices, to be a strong content distribution partner, and for its books to be able to be read on many different devices. So that about wraps it up for this week in review. We've just hit the 1 hour mark, and you have been listening to the Good E-Reader Radio Show. Of course, we do this show once a week, but you can see this show happening a little bit more often when we are at Book Expo and when we were at Computex, and we're going to be doing both next week. So it's going to be a big week. There's the Nook 2 on Tuesday. There's Book Expo on Monday and Tuesday, and then next weekend we're going to be in China covering the largest tech show in the world. And you can only get all this news and a whole lot more at goodereader.com. So join in on the fun, visit our forum. If you're an independent author, you can talk about your book, promote your book, but you can also find the latest guides, tutorials, firmware updates, and video tutorials. We're the only e-reader site that makes its own ebook loading tutorials. So whether you have a Kindle, whether you have a pocketbook, a Barnes & Noble Nook Color, or virtually any e-reader made in the last few years, if you want to learn how to do more advanced functions with your device, if you even want to just do basic things like buy an ebook from another store and load it onto your device, we teach you how to do that. So not only at Good E-Reader do we have all of the latest news, the Good E-Reader Radio Show, and our videos, but we also have our forum. And if you want to get the week in review sent to you via email, subscribe to our Good E-Reader newsletter. We send it out once a week. Subscribing is absolutely free. So if you want to get the latest news, the most important stories, be sure to check that out. And that about wraps it up for this week. For Good E-Reader, this is Marcus.
This is Nick.
And everybody, take care.